Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Panama. I suppose I was just looking through the COVID lists and just looking at different countries ranking around Australia in the sort of the ranks there. So you look down things and you see these countries which you haven't seen before, you're looking at. And Panama rather interested me because I had heard that Panama was an artificially created country from Colombia that the Americans then pushed for its separation and then used it for the Panama Canal. I don't know whether that's true. I'll find out whether that's true here. And looking at its flag is a very sort of aesthetic flag. It's got a it's a checkered flag. It's got a blue and red and with stars, a blue star and a red star. It's a very I find a very attractive star. And then it says, as a rather interesting thing, as its motto is for the benefit of the world. So what the heck does that mean? But it does mean please come in and exploit us. So it's rather interesting to go through on it. It was submitted to the United Nations in 1945. It seceded from the Republic of Colombia in 1903. So there's a bit of a story here. So I've got a story. It's a very interesting country, and in terms of the sort of land bridge between the Americas and South America, it's a very interesting position. So let's do a little bit of talk about it. I'm now, I sort of went through a stage in this rehab of being, unfortunately, you get very tired and then you push things and you read through articles and you read back at them and you say, look, I retained none of that, even though I spoke it out aloud. Okay, let's talk about Panama. Let's see, officially the Republic of Panama, República de Panama, is a transcontinental country in Central America and South America, bordered by Costa Rica in the west, Colombia in the southwest, and the Caribbean Sea to the north, the Pacific Ocean to the south. The capital, the largest city, is Panama City, whose metropolitan area is home to nearly half the country's 4 million people. So it's 4 million people. Okay, it's interesting. Panama was inhabited by indigenous tribes before the Spanish colonists arrived in the 16th century. It broke away from Spain in 1812 and joined the Republic of Gran Colombia, a union of Nueva Granada, Ecuador, Venezuela. Wow! After Gran Colombia dissolved in 1831, Panama and Nueva Granada eventually became the Republic of Colombia. With the backing of the United States, Panama seceded from Colombia in 1903, allowing the construction of the Panama Canal to be completed by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers between 1904 and 1914. In 1977, Truch-Carter treaties led to the transfer of the canal to the United States, from the United States to Panama, on the December 31, 1999. Oh, well, gee whiz. Yeah, so the United States really interfered with it. And I'm so pleased that it's back. The Panama Canal is no longer in the United States' hands. Just because, you know, keep your own country to yourself, basically. I mean, it's, I don't know. I found it. Revenue for canal tolls continues to represent a significant portion of Panama's GDP. Although commerce, banking and tourism are major growing sectors, it's regarded as a high-income country. In 2018, Panama ranked 66th in the world in terms of Human Development Index. In 2018, Panama was ranked 7th most competitive economy in Latin America. According to the World Economic Forum's Global Competitive Index, covering around 40% of its land area, Panama's jungles are home to abundance of tropical plants and animals, some of them found nowhere else on Earth, like most things. Panama is a founding member of the United Nations and other international organisations as OAS, LAA, WHO and NAM. Well, there you go. That's what I thought. And I, from an external person, it's very agonising to see the United States. They're great people, but, I mean, they do... Once they get involved, it's very hard to do it. I don't know what is the structure in there. There's a structure of expansionism, which is commercial benefit. It's sort of like it's really gotten to their skin. The definite origin of the name Panama is unknown. There are several theories. One states that the country was named after a commonly found species of tree, Sertuclea apetilla, the Panama tree. Other states, the first settlers arrived in Panama in August when the butterflies were abandoned. And the means many butterflies in one of several indigenous Amerindian languages that were spoken in the territory prior to the Spanish colonization. The most scientifically corroborated theory by Panama linguists states that the word is a Hispanicization of the Canal language word for Banaba, which means distance or far away. A commonly relayed legend in Panama is that there was a fishing village that bore the name Panama, which reportedly meant an abundance of fish when the Spanish colonists first landed the area. The exact location of the village is unknown. The legend is usually collaborated by Captain Antonio Tello de Guzman's diary entries, which reports landing at an unnamed village while exploring the Pacific coast of Panama in 1515. He only describes the village as the same small indigenous fishing town. In 1517, Don Gaspar Espinosa, a Spanish lieutenant, decided to settle a post in the same location as Guzman described. In 1519, Pedro de Alvear decided to establish the Spanish Empire's Pacific port at the site. The new settlement replaced Santa Maria de Langa de Larian, which was lost its function with the Crown's global plan after the Spanish exploitation of the riches in the Pacific began. Oh dear, my God. The official definition of the origin of the name, as promoted by Panama's Ministry of Education, is abundance of fish, trees, and butterflies. This is a usual description given in social studies textbooks. I like that about how, well, it's fish, trees, butterflies, everything. History. At the time of the arrival of the Spanish in the 16th century, the known inhabitants of Panama include the Caribes and the Colochi tribes. These people have nearly disappeared as they had no immunity to the European infectious diseases. Well, there you go. Sort of a pandemic. The Isthmus of Panama is formed about 3 million years ago when a land bridge between North and South America finally became complete. The plants and animals gradually crossed in both directions. The existence of the isthmus affected the dispersal of peoples, agriculture and technology throughout American continent from the appearance of the first hunters and collectors to the era of the villages and cities. The earliest discoveries of artifacts of indigenous people in Panama included the Paleo-Indian projectile points. Later, central Panama was home to some the first pottery making in the Americas. For example, the cultures of Malilgo, which date back to 250-170 BC. These evolved into significant populations best known through their spectacular burials, 500-900 AD, at the Monaligo archaeological site, and the beautiful Gran Chloe style polychrome pottery, the monumental monolithic sculptures at the Baal's Cult site, which is important traces of the ancient Isthmian cultures, isn't it? Before the Europeans arrived in Panama, it was widely settled by the Chichaban, Chichcoan, and Chuquiva peoples. The largest group were the Chuquiva, whose specific language affiliation is poorly documented. The size of the indigenous population on the isthmus at the time of European colonization, it's uncertain. Estimates range as high as 2 million people, but more recent studies place the number closer to 200,000. The archaeological, which is still a lot of people by European standards, archaeological finds and testimonials by early European explorers describe diverse native Isthmian groups exhibiting cultural variety and suggesting people developed biregular regional routes of commerce. When Panama was colonized, the indigenous people fled into the forests and nearby islands. Scholars believe the infectious disease was the primary cause for the population decline of the American natives. The indigenous people had no acquired immunity to diseases which had been chronic in the Eurasian populations for centuries. The conquest of 1799, so that's a long time afterwards. Rodriguez de Bastos sailed westward from Venezuela in 1501 in search of gold. He became the first European to explore the Isthmus of Panama. A year later, when Christopher Columbus visited the Isthmus and established a short-lived settlement. Okay, I didn't understand that one. I have to read up about Christopher Columbus. Vasco Nunes de Balboa's torturous trek to the Atlantic. From the Atlantic to Pacific in 1513 demonstrated that the Isthmus was indeed a path between the seas, and Panama quickly became the crossroad marketplace of Spain's empire in the New World. Gold and silver were bought by ship from South America, hauled across the Isthmus and loaded into ships for Spain. The route became known as Camino Real, or the Royal Road, although it was more commonly known as Camino de Cruz, the Road of Crosses, because of the number of grave sites along the way. Oh dear. Panama was under Spanish rule for almost 300 years and became part of the Viceroyalty of Peru, along with all other Spanish possessions in South America. From the outset, the Panamanian identity was based on a sense of geographic destiny. The Panamanian fortunes fluctuated with the geopolitical importance of the Isthmus. The colonial experiences spawned Panamanianism, nationalism, and a racially complex and highly stratified society, and a source of internal conflicts that ran counter to the uniforming force of nationalism. In 1538, the Real Audiencia of Panama was established, initially with jurisdiction from Nicaragua to Cape Horn. My God, it's Cape Horn's, wow. Until the conquest of Peru. The Real Audiencia was a judicial district that functioned as an appeals court. Audiencia had an orica, or Spanish hero or judge. Spanish authorities had little control over much of the territory of Panama. Large sections managed to resist conquest and missionarization until very late in the colonial era. Because of this, indigenous people of the area were often referred to as Indios de Guerra, war Indians, who resisted Spanish attempts to conquer or missionize them. However, Panama was enormously important to the Spain strategically because it was the easiest way to transship silver mined in Peru and Europe. Silver cargoes were landed in Panama and then were taken overland to Portobello or Nombre de Dios on the Caribbean side of the Isthmus for further shipment. Because of the incomplete Spanish control, Panama route was vulnerable to attack from pirates, mostly Dutch and English, and from the New World Africans called Cimarroons, who had freed themselves from enslavement that lived in communes or planks around the Camino Real and Panama's interior, and on some of the islands off the Panama coast. One such famous community mounted a small kingdom of Baiano. Well, I keep on learning these things. I want to find out this Baiano, which emerged in 1552 to 1558. Sir Francis Drake's famous raids on Panama in 1572 to 73, and John Oxlam's crossing of the Pacific Ocean, aided by Panama, Cameroons, and Spanish authorities, were only able to bring them under control by making an alliance with them that guaranteed their freedom in exchange for military support in 1582. Well, there's a new little land, and Francis Drake, this has got so much going around in it. Wow. I just want to... it's Baiano. Baiano. The prosperity enjoyed during the first two centuries, 1540 to 1740, while contributing to colonial growth, and placing extensive regional judicial authority, regular density, as part of its jurisdiction, and the pivotal role it played at the heart of the Spanish Empire, the first modern global empire, helped to define a distinctive sense of autonomy and the region and national identity within Panama well before the rest of the colonies. The end of encomienda system in Alzira, however, sparked the conquest of Veraguas in the same year. Under the leadership of Francisco Valcas, the region Veraguas passed to the Castilian rule in 1558. The newly conquered region, the old system of encomienda was imposed. On the other hand, Panamanian movement for independence can be indirectly attributed to the abolition of the encomienda system in Azure Peninsula, set forth by the Spanish Crown. Whatever does that all mean? You people there in Americans, I can imagine Americans know this right down to the last spot. But from Australian reading, this is just like, this could well as be the moon as anything else like this. In its stead, a system of medium and small-sized land ownership was promoted, thus taking away the power from the large landowners and into the hands of small-sized proprietors. Wow, keeps on going, doesn't it? Just reading this through. Okay, I think I've got this. Right, so I'm just taking a little bit here. Okay, I don't know how this is all going through. Okay, Panama, interesting place. Panama was the site of the ill-fated Darien scheme, which set up a Scottish colony in the region. Am I reading this right? A Scottish colony? What? Panama was the site of the ill-fated Darien scheme, which set up a Scottish colony in the region in 1698. This failed for a number of reasons, and the ensuing debt contributed to the Union of England and Scotland. In 1707... What? I can't believe it. The history gets even more. I read about the anarchy system. What? This is getting too complicated. In 1671, the privateer Henry Morgan, licensed by the English government, sacked and burned the city of Panama, the second most important city in the Spanish New World at the time. In 1770, the Viceroy of Niguanda, Northern South America, was created in response to other Europeans trying to take Spanish territory in the Caribbean region. The Isthmus of Panama was placed under its jurisdiction. However, the remoteness of New Granada's capital, Santa Fe de Bogota, modern city of Colombia, proved a great obstacle than the Spanish Crown anticipated, as the authority of New Granada was contested by the seniority, closer proximity, and previous ties of Viceroy to Lima, and other even by Panama's own initiative. This uneasy relationship between the Panama and Bogota will persist for centuries. I think we have moved on. I want to find about the Darien scheme. There's so much I want to find out about. Unfortunately, my memory is failing me all the time. Azeotropes. What? I've got to find out the Darien scheme. Oh my god. Okay, in 1744, the Bishop Francisco Xavier de Luna Victoria de Caso established the College of San Ygorde de Loyola in June 3rd, 1749, founded the La Real y Pontifica Universidad de San Xavier By this time, however, Panama's importance and influence had become insignificant in Spain's dwindled in Europe, and advances in navigation techniques increasingly permitted ships to round Cape Horn in order to reach the Pacific. While Panama route was short, it was also labour-intensive and expensive because of the loading and unloading of laden down trek required to get from one coast to the other. My godfather. So the Darien scheme is just the most like a Scottish colony. Oh, God, I've got to go read that. 1800s, as Spanish-American wars of independence were heating up all across Latin America, Panama City was preparing for independence. However, their plans were accelerated by the unilateral Grito de la Villa de los Santos, cry for the town of the saints, issued on November the 10th, 1821, by the residents of Azara, who, without backing for Panama City, declared their separation from the Spanish Empire. In both Veracruz and the capital, this act was met with disdain, although on differing levels. To Veracruz, it was the ultimate act of treason, while to the capital, it was seen as inefficient and irregular, furthermore forced them to accelerate their plans. Nevertheless, the Grito was a sign on the part of the residents of Zero of their antagonism towards independence movements in the capital. Those in the capital region, in turn, regarded Azarian's movement with contempt, since the separatists in Panama City believed that their counterparts, Azero, were fighting not only for independence and Spain, but also the right for self-rule, apart from Panama City, once the Spanish rule was gone. It was seen as a risky move by Azero, which lived in fear of Colonel Jose Pedro Antino de la Fabrique y de las Sascavero. These are long names. In 1744 to 1841, the colonel was such a staunch loyalist that he had all the Isthmus military supplies in his hands. He feared quick retaliation. They feared quick retaliation and swift retribution against the separatists. What they had counted on, however, was the influence of the separatists in the capital. Ever since October 1821, when the former Governor General Juan de la Cruz Mergon left the Isthmus on a complaint in Quito and left the colonel in charge, the separatists had been slowly converting Fabrique into a separatist side. So, by November the 10th, Fabrique was now a supporter of the independence movement. Soon after the separatist declaration of Los Santos, Fabrique convened every organizational in the capital with separatist interests and formally declared the city support for independence. No military repercussions occurred because of the skillful bribing of royalist troops. You should get a medal for skillful bribing. So this is just, it's just mind twisting. The twist in my mind is Francis Drake having a bit of a burn and British having a bit of burn of Panama cities, and then the Darien scheme. Where, what the heck? Okay, post-colonial Panama. In the first 80 years independence of Spain, Panama was the Department of Colombia after voluntarily joining at the end of 1821. The people of the Isthmus made several attempts to secede and came close to success in 1831 and then again during the Thousand Days War in 1899 to 1902. Understood among indigenous Panamas as a struggle for land rights under the leadership of Victoriano Lorenzo. The U.S. intent to influence the area, especially the Panama Canal's construction and control, led to the separation of Panama from Colombia in 1903 and the establishment of the nation. When the Senate of Colombia rejected Hayden's treaty on January 22, the United States decided to support and encourage the Panama's movement. In November 1903, Panama proclaimed its independence and concluded the Hahn-Bahn-Valley Treaty with the United States. The treaty granted rights to the United States as if it were the sovereign to a zone roughly 16 kilometers wide and 80 kilometers long. In that zone, the U.S. would build the canal and then administer, fortify, and defend it in perpetuity. In 1914, the United States completed the existing 83-kilometer canal. My God. From 1903 to 1968, Panama was a constitutional democracy dominated by a commercially oriented oligarchy. My godfather. During 1950s, the Panamanian military began to challenge the oligarchy's political hegemony. In the early 60s, saw the beginning of the substantial pressure of the Panama for renegotiation of the Hay-Banu-Valu Treaty, including riots that broke out in early 64, resulting in widespread looting and dozens of deaths and evacuation of the American embassy, as I would get out of there, Yanks. Amid negotiation for Robes-Johnson's treaty, Panama led the elections in 68. The candidates were all these people. As Madrid was declared winner of the elections, that were marked by violence and accusation of frauds against the other blokes. In October 1968, Adolfo Madrid took office as president of Panama, promising to lead the government of national union that would end the reigning corruption and pave the way for a new Panama. A week and a half later, October, the National Guard ousted us and initiated a downward spiral which culminated in the United States invasion in 1989. Well, I do remember that. That was Reagan. I think it was Reagan did that one. He was running drug. It was General something or other. We'll see if he mentions. To preserve the Guard's interests, Lieutenant Colonel Omar Torres Heza and Major Boris Martinez commanded the first military coup against a civilian government in the Panama Republican history. The military justified itself, declaring that Arias Madrid was trying to install a dictatorship and promised to return to constitutional rule. Meantime, the Guard began a series of populist measures that would gain support for the coup. Among them were price freezing on food, medicine and other goods, rent level freeze, legislation for the permits of squatting families and brothers surrounding the historic site of Panama Vigero. Sounds populist to me. Sounds very populist. My head is beginning to really hurt about this. This is the Darren movement. I have to find out about that. Parallel to this, the military began a policy, and also the anarchy, a period of anarchy after Henry I. And of course I speak to people and say, oh yes, we knew all this thing. Parallel to this, the military began a policy of repression against the opposition, as they do, who were labelled as communists. The military appointed provisional government, junta, that was arranged new elections. However, the National Guard would prove very reluctant to abandon power and soon began calling itself El Gobernero Vigilante, the revolutionary government. Post 1970. So, what year is that? That's 69. So that's 69. My God. So it's ultimate. Oh, God. Poor Panama. Okay, so only up to the 1970s, and I'm a kid here running around a free Australia. Under Omar Torres' control, the military transformed the political and economic structure of the country, initiating massive coverage of social security services and expanding public education. It sounds as though they're not doing too bad. The constitution was changed in 72 for the reform to the constitution of was replaced by the National Assembly. The new assembly, also known as the Power of the People, was composed of 505 selected by the military with no participation of political powers, which the military had eliminated. The new constitution proclaimed maximum leader of the Panamanian Revolution and conceded him unlimited power for 6 years, although to keep a facade of constitutionality. In 1981, Torres died in a plane crash. Torres' death altered the tone of Panama's political evolution. Despite the 1983 constitutional amendment which prescribed the political role of the military, the Panama Defence Force, PDF, as were then known, continued to dominate the Panamanian political life. By this time, General Manuel Antonio Noriega, that's it, Noriega, that's the one that they really hated, was firmly in control of both PDF and the civilian government. In 1984, the election candidates were all these people. Barreto was declared the winner of the election and had been clearly won by Addis. Patella inherited a country in economic ruin and largely indebted to the International Monetary Fund and World Bank. Amid the economic crisis, Patella's influence claimed the country's creditors and street protests arose, and so did the military repression. Meanwhile, Noriega's regime had fostered a well-hidden criminal economy that operated in parallel source of income for the military and their allies, providing revenues from drugs and money laundering. Towards the end of the military dictatorship, a new wave of Chinese migrants arrived at Zenith in a hope of migrating to the United States. The smuggling of Chinese became an enormous business, with revenues of $200 million for Noriega's regime. My godfather. The military dictatorship at the time supported the United States, perpetrated the assassination and torture of more than 100 Panamanians and forced at least 100 more dissidents into exile. Noriega also began playing a double role in Central America under the supervision of the CIA. While the contrarian groups conducted diplomatic efforts to achieve peace in the region, Noriega supplied Nicaraguan's Contras and other guerrillas in the regions with weapons and ammunition. My godfather! On June 6, 1987, the recently retired Colonel Roberto Hadaza, resentful of Noriega, had broken the agreed-upon torture plan of succession that would have made him the chief of the military after Noriega decided to denounce the regime. He revealed the details of the electoral fraud, accused Noriega of planning Toro's death, and declared he was the person who died in the plane crash. Okay. And declared had received $12 million from the Shah of Iran for giving exiled Iranian leader asylum. He also accused Noriega of the assassination by decapitation of the then opposition leader, Dr. Hugh Sadafora. On the 9th of June 1987, the civil crusade was created and began organizing actions of civil disobedience. The crusade called for a general strike. In response, the military suspended constitutional right and declared the state of emergency in the country. On July 10th, the civil crusade called for a massive demonstration that was violently repressed by the Domas, the military special riot control unit. That day, known as the El Verso Negro Black Friday, left 600 people injured, another 600 people detained, many of whom were later tortured and raped. The United States President Ronald Reagan began a series of sanctions against the military regime. The United States froze economic and military assistance to Panama in the middle of 1987 in response to the domestic political crisis in Panama and the attack on the U.S. Embassy. You just don't attack a U.S. Embassy. These sanctions did little to overthrow Noriega but severely damaged Panama's economy. The sanctions hit the Panamanian population hard and caused the gross domestic product to decline 25% between 87 and 89. On February 88, General Manuel Antonio Noriega was accused of drug trafficking by federal juries in Tampa and Miami. In 1988, the U.S. President Ronald Reagan invoked the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, freezing Panamanian government's assets and all U.S. organizations. In May 1989, Panamanians voted overwhelmingly for the anti-Noriega candidates. Noriega regime promptly annulled the election and embarked on a new round of repression. Oh my God. God. United States. But he was. The United States had no qualms about using it for their own political controls in other places. The U.S. invasion of 89, the United States government said Operation Just Cause. What a fantastic thing. Crusade, which began in December 20th, 89, was necessary to safeguard the lives of the U.S. citizens of Panama, defend democracy and human rights, combat trafficking, and secure neutrality of the Panamanian Canal as required by the Tordesillas-Carter Treaties. New York Times, a transcript of President Bush's address. A Human Rights Watch wrote in the 89 report, Washington turned a blind eye to the abuses of Panama for many years until a concern over drug trafficking prompted indictments of General Noriega by two grand juries in Florida in September 1988. The U.S. reported 23 servicemen killed and 324 wounded, with the Panama casualty estimated around 450. Described as a surgical maneuver, the action led to estimates of civilian deaths from 200 to 4,000 during 2 weeks of armed activities. The United Nations put the Panamanian civilian death toll at 500. The United States gave a figure of 202 killed, by former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark estimated 4,000 deaths. It represents the largest military operation since the end of the Vietnam War. The number of U.S. civilians and the dependents who had worked the Panama Canal Commission and the U.S. military were killed by the Panamanian Defense Force was never fully disclosed. On December 29, the United Nations General Assembly approved the resolution calling for the intervention in Panama, a flagrant violation of international law and the independence of sovereignty and territorial integrity of the states. A similar resolution was vetoed by the Security Council, by the United States and the United Kingdom, and by France. Well, good God, United States. On December the 29th, the urban population, mainly living below the poverty level, was greatly affected by the 89 intervention. As pointed out in 1995 UN Technical Assistance Mission to Panama, the bombardments during the invasion displaced 20,000 people. The most heavily affected district was the impoverished El Chiriro, where several blocks of apartments were completely destroyed. El Chiriro had been built in the days of canal constructions. Oh, God. Wow. A series of wooden barracks, which easily caught fire under the... Oh, my Godfather. United States attack. Oh, my God, you poor Panama. The economic damage caused by the intervention has been estimated at $2 billion. Most Panamanians supported the intervention. Post-intervention era, Panama's electoral tribunal moved quickly to restore civilian constitutional government, reinstated the results of the May 89 election on December the 27th, 89, and confirmed the victory of President Guillermo Aranda and Vice President Guillermo Ford and Ricardo Arias Calderon. During its five-year term, the often fractious government struggled to meet the public's high expectations. Its new police force was a major improvement over the predecessor, but not fully able to deter crime. Ernesto Pez Baldrez was sworn in as president in September 1984, after an internationally monitored election campaign. Pez Baldrez ran as a candidate for the 33-party coalition dominated by the Democratic Revolutionary Party, PRD, the erstwhile political arm of the military dictatorship. Baldrez worked skillfully during the campaign to relocate the PRD's image, emphasizes the party's populist Chavistic roots rather than its association with Noriega. He won the election, but with only 33% of the vote when the major non-PRD forces splintered into competing factions. His administration carried out economic reforms and worked closely with the U.S. implementation of the Canal Treaties. On September 1999, Maya Moscoso, widow of the former President Alfonso Arias Madrid, took office after defeating the PRD candidate Martin Torres, son of Omar Torres, in a free and fair election. During her administration, Moscow attempted to strengthen the social programs, especially for child and youth development, protection, and general welfare. Moscow's administration successfully handled the Panama Canal transfer and was effective in the administration of the canal. Thank goodness it took that back. Oh, God. PRD's Martin Torres won presidency with a legislative majority in 2004. Torres ran his campaign on a platform of, among other pledges, zero tolerance for corruption, a problem endemic in Moscow's and Perez Balder's administration. After taking office, Torres passed a number of laws which made the government more transparent. He formed the National Anti-Corruption Council, whose members represented the highest levels of government and civil societies, labour organisation, religious leadership. In addition, many of his closest cabinet ministers were non-political technocrats known for their support of Georgia's government anti-corruption aims. Despite Georgia's administration's public stance on corruption, many high-profile cases, particularly involving political and business elites, were never acted upon. And, you know, it is true that Australia's got a heap of technocrats. Okay. Conservative supermarket magnate Riccardo Mattei was elected to succeed Martin Torres in a landslide victory in May 2009 presidential election. Mattei's business credentials drew voters worried about the slowing growth of the 2008 financial crisis. Standing for four-party opposition Alliance of Change, Mattei gained 60% of the vote against 37% of the candidate for the governing left-wing Democratic Revolutionary Party. On May the 4th, 2014, Carlos Valla won the 2014 presidential election with over 39% of the votes against the party of his former political partner, Riccardo Mattei. And Combalo D'Amato and the candidate José Arias. He was sworn in on July 2014. On July 2019, Lorenzo took possession of the presidency. Whatever all that means, I don't know. Sorry. Panama. Geography. Panama is located in Central America, bordering both the Caribbean Sea and the Pacific Ocean between Colombia and Costa Rica. And most of it lies in latitudes 7 to 10 degrees and longitudes 77 to 83 degrees west. The location of the Isthmus of Panama is strategic. By 2000, Panama controlled the Panama Canal, which connects the Atlantic Ocean and the Caribbean Sea in the North Pacific Ocean. Total area of 74,000 square kilometers. The dominant feature of Panama's geography is the central spine of mountains and hills that forms the continental divide. The divide does not form part of the great mountain chains of the North Americas, and only near the Colombian border there are highlands related to the Andean systems of South America. The spine that forms the divide is a highly eroded arch, an uplift of the sea bottom, which peaks are formed by volcanic intrusions. The mountain range of the divide is called Caldera del Talamaca, near the Costa Rican border. Further east, it becomes the Serena de Pasa, a portion closer and lower saddle of the Isthmus, where the Panama Canal is located, is called the Sierra de Vargas. As a whole, the range between Costa Rica and the canal, generally referred to by the geographers as Caldera Central. The highest point of the country is Volcan Baru, which rises, 3,475 metres, much higher than any point in Australia. A nearly impenetrable jungle forms the Darien Grip. So Darien is really the Darien Plains, we'll really find out, between Panama and Colombia, where the Colombian guerrillas and drug dealers operate and sometimes take hostages. And unrest and the forest protection movement create a break in the Panaman American Highway, which is otherwise forms a complete road from Alaska to Patagonia. So there is a break. Let me see. It goes completely from one end, from Alaska to America, and what a great highway. That would be a great thing, but you can't get there. What the heck does it mean? I can't get there because it's broken. Panama's wildlife is the most diverse of Central America. It's home to many South American species, as well as North American wildlife. Waterways. Nearly 500 rivers lace Panama's rugged landscape. Mostly unnavigable, many originate in swift highland streams, meander to the valleys, and form the coastal deltas. However, the Chagas River, located near central Panama, is one of the few wide rivers that and source of hydroelectric power. The central part of the river is dammed by the Gutton Dam and forms Gutton Lake, the official lake that constitutes part of the Panama Canal. The lake was created by the construction of the Gutton Dam across the Rio Gardas between 1907 and 1907 and 1913. Once created, Gutton Lake was the largest man-made lake in the world, and the dam was the largest on Earth, the largest Earth dam. The river drains northwest to Caribbean, and Campeche's what was the largest? Must be about the ones. The river drains to southwest Caribbean. The Rio Chepo, another source of hydroelectric power, is one of the more than 300 rivers emptying into the Pacific. These Pacific-oriented rivers are longer and slower running than those of the Caribbean side. Their basins are more extensive. One of the longest is the Rio Chura, which flows to the Gulf of San Miguel, one of the nation's only rivers navigable by larger vessels. Wow! What a fantastic place! The Caribbean coastline is marked by several natural harbours. However, Cristobal, at the Caribbean's isthmus, terminus of the canal, had the only important port facilities in the late 1980s. The numerous islands of the archipelago Bocas del Toro near the beaches of Costa Rica provide extensive natural roadstead and shield banana port of Amartame. More than 350 San Balas Islands near Colombia are strung out over more than 160 kilometers along the sheltered Caribbean coastline. Wow, that sounds such a nice place, doesn't it? So you look, I'm stuck here reading it, you're stuck here listening it, and we all want to go to Panama. And it's just so sad that, you know, you'd think the United States would work out a better way of doing it. You know, how that corruption... It's really interesting about how corruption just gets in there. You just can't... Once it gets going, you can't stop it. There's some reason that you can't get... Oh, I don't know. There's something about corruption that once it gets in, it becomes too big to control, and people get too involved, and people become expert in handling it. The terminal ports located at each end of the Panama Canal, namely Port Cristobal, Colón, and Port Bolívar, are ranked as the second and third, respectively, in Latin America in terms of the number of containers handled. Port Bolívar, obviously. Yeah, they have to be the same amount of containers handled if they go through them. Okay, unless there's a certain amount of... that just get dumped at Panama anyhow. Port Bolívar covers 132 hectares and contains four berths, containers and two multi-port berths. In total, the berths of over 24 kilometres... no, 2.4 kilometres long, the berths... 15 metres deep. Port Bolívar has 18 superposed Panamax and Panamax key cranes and 44 gantry panes. The port of Bolívar also contains 120 square metres, so 2,100 square metres of warehouse space. I thank you very much for that information. Ports Cristobal's and K's and container terminals and panel ports Cristobal's handled enormous amount of handle. The excellent deep water ports capable of accommodating large, very large crude oil tankers are located at Cruzales, whatever it is. I'm sure this is going to be nuked like anything. It's a poor thing. I'm sure China and Russia, when they're going to say, where are we going to nuke? We're going to nuke this place. Okay, I can't really read that. There's too many figures. Climate. Panama has a tropical climate. Temperatures are uniformly high as it is relatively humid, and there's little seasonal variation. My God. Diurnal ranges are low. On a typical dry season, a day in the capital, there's an early morning minimum of, say, 24 degrees, and a maximum of 30 degrees. That's nothing. The temperature seldom exceeds 32 degrees for more than a short time. Wow. Temperatures on the Pacific side of the Isthmus are somewhat lower than the Caribbean, and the breezes that tends to rise at dusk in most parts of the country. Temperatures are remarkably cooler in the higher parts of the mountain ranges, and frost occurs at the top. Climate regions are determined less on the basis of temperature than on rainfall, which varies regionally from less than 1,300 millimetres, wow, to more than 3,000 millimetres. Whoa, that's a lot. Almost all the rainfall falls during the rainy season, which is usually from April to December, but varies in length from 7 to 9 months. In general, rainfall is much heavier on the Caribbean than on the Pacific side of the Continental Divide. The annual average in Panama City is a little more than half of that in Cologne. Although the rainy season thunderstorms are common, the country is outside the hurricane belt, thank goodness. Panama's tropical environment supports an abundance of plants. Forest dominates, interrupted in places by grassland, scrub, and crops. Although nearly 40% of Panama is still wooded, deforestation is a continuing threat to the rain-rich woodlands. Trees cover has been reduced by more than 50% since the 1940s. Go development! Subsistence farming, widely practiced from the northeastern jungle to the southwestern grasslands, consists largely of corn, bean, and tuber plots. Mangrove swamps occur along parts of both the coast, with banana plantations occupying the deltas near Costa Rica. In many places, a multi-canopied rainforest abuts swamp on one side of the country and extends to the lower reaches of the slopes on the other. Politics, my godfather. Panama's politics take place in the framework of presidential representative democracy republic, whereby the president of Panama is both the head of state and head of government. And the national party system, executive power is exercised by the government. Legislative power is vested in both government and the National Assembly. The judiciary is independent of the executive, thank goodness. National elections are universal and mandatory for all citizens 18 years or older. So it's not, it's Australia, it's mandatory, and Panama is mandatory, you've got to vote. National elections for both executive and legislative branches take place every 5 years. Members of the judicial branch are appointed by heads of state. Panama's National Assembly is elected by proportional representation in fixed electoral districts. So many smaller parties are represented. Presidential elections requires a simple majority. Out of the five last presidents, only ex-president Ricardo Martinelli has managed to be elected by over 50% of the vote. Political culture. Since the end of Manuel Noriega's military dictatorship in 1989, Panama has successfully completed 5 peaceful transfers of power to opposing political factions. The political landscape is dominated by 2 major parties and many small ones, many of which have driven by individual leaders and more than ideologies. Former President Sebastián Trujillo, his son General Omar Trujillo, he succeeded Mia Mosco, widow of Alfonso Anas. Panama's most recent national elections occurred in 2014. The incumbent vice president, Charles Valla, declared the victor. In 2019, Panama's general election was scheduled for May the 5th, 2019, with the current president, Sean Valas, being ineligible due to constitutional limits on a second term. Foreign relations. The United States cooperate with the Panamanian government in promoting economic, political, security, and social development through U.S. international agencies. Cultural ties between the countries are strong, and many Panamanians go to the United States for higher education and advanced training. Military. The Panamanian public forces are the national security forces of Panama. Panama is the second country in Latin America, the other being Costa Rica, to be permanently abolishing a standing army. I'm just going to get this. There is no standing army in Panama. That is the most. Well, they're going to have no military crews. There's no army in Panama. Now, Costa Rica. I think that's good. There's lots of administrative divisions, and it looks a beautiful map of Panama. It's a beautiful. You couldn't ask for anything more beautiful than the map of the political parties. What a fantastic thing, getting rid of the army. That's great. Economy. According to the CIA World Factbook, wow, as of 2012, Panama had an unemployment rate of 2.7%. A food surplus was registered in August 2008. On the Human Development Index, Panama is ranked 60th in 2015. In more recent years, Panama's economy has experienced a boom with growth in real gross domestic product averaging 10.4%. It's interesting that New Zealand has got rid of its Air Force. There was no New Zealand Air Force. That's why we all suddenly had all these MiG jets being sold in Australia, because they're ex-New Zealand Air Force ones. They're pretty amazing. And of course, when the New Zealand Army comes along here, we show off our Air Force and they go, oh wow, we don't have one of those. I'm sure there are military planes, there's militaries, but they're not in the Air Force. In more recent years, Panama's experienced a boom with growth in real terms averaging 10.4%. Panama's economy is among the fastest growing and best managed in Latin America. The Latin Business Chronicle predicted that Panama would be the fastest growing economy in Latin America during the 5-year period 2010-14, matching Brazil's 10% rate. My God, oh, poor Brazil's completely down the track plug hole. The expansion project of Panama Canal is expected to boost the economic expansion for several times. Panama has also signed the Panama-United States Trade Promotion Agreement, which eliminates tariffs U.S. services. Even though Panama is regarded as a high-income country, it still remains a country of stark contrast, perpetuated by dramatic education disparities. Between 2015 and 17, poverty at $5.50 fell from 15.4 to estimated. Oh, the poverty level at $5.55 a day, I suppose, to 41%. Economics sectors. Panama's economy, because of its key geographic location, is mainly based on well-developed service sector, especially commerce, tourism, and trading. The handover of the Central Canal and military installations by the United States has given a large rise to construction projects. The project to build a third set of locks in the Panama Canal was overwhelmingly approved by a referendum with a lower voter turnout, however, in October 2006. The official estimate of the cost of the project is $5.25 but with the canal's major economic importance because it provides millions of dollars of toll revenue to the national economy and provides massive employment. The transfer of control of the canal to the Canadian government was completed in 1999 after 85 years of United States control. Copper and gold deposits are being developed by foreign investors to the dismay of the same environmental groups, as all projects are located within protected areas. Of course, God doesn't put a gold deposit in a rich person's land. Panama and the IFC, whatever the IFC stands for. Since the Earth's 20th century, Panama has, with the revenues from the canal, built the largest regional financial centre in Central America, with consolidated assets being more than three times of the Panama's GDP. The banking sector employs more than 24,000 people directly. Financial implementation contributed 9.3% of GDP. Stability has been a key strength of Panama's financial sectors, which has benefited the country's favorable economic business climate. Banking institutions report sound growth and sound financial earnings. The bank's supervisory regime is largely compliant with the Basel core principles of effective banking supervision. Well, there you go. As a region financial center, Panama exports some banking services mainly to Latin America and plays an important role in the country's economy. However, Panama still cannot compare to the position held by Hong Kong, Singapore, and other Asian centers. Panama still has a reputation worldwide for being a tax haven, but has agreed to enhance transparency, especially since the release of the 2016 Panama Papers. Significant progress has been made to improve full compliance with the anti-money laundering recommendations. Panama was removed from the FATF-GAFI grey list in 2016. However, efforts remain to make the IMF repeatedly mentions the need to strengthen financial transparency and fiscal structure. Transportation. Panama is home to the Tucumán International Airport, Central America's largest airport. Additionally, there are more than 20 smaller airfields in the country. Panama's road and traffic transportation are generally safe, though night driving is difficult in many cases, restricted to local authorities. This usually occurs in the informal settlements. Traffic in Panama moves to the right, and Panama laws require that drivers and passengers wear seatbelts and airbags are not mandatory. Highways are generally well developed for the Latin American country, except the road doesn't go all the way down. Currently, Panama City has buses known as Metro buses along two metro lines, formerly the system dominated by the colorfully painted Diablos Rojos. A few remain and mostly used on rural areas along the Chivas. Diablos Rojos is usually customized and painted with bright colors, usually depicting famous actors, politicians, and singers. Panama City streets experience frequent traffic jams due to poor planning for extensive private vehicle ownership. Tourism. Tourism in Panama has maintained its growth over the past 5 years due to government tax and price discounts to foreign guests and retirees. My God, I'd love to retire them. These economic incentives have caused Panama to be regarded as a relatively good place to retire. Real estate developers in Panama have increased the number of tourism destinations in the past 5 years because of interest in visitors and visitor incentives. Okay. What's going on, my godfather? The number of tourists from Europe grew by 23% during the first 9 months of 2008. According to Tourism Authority Panama, ATP, the January to September, 71,000 tourists from Europe have entered Panama. Okay. In 2012, some number I can't understand, entered the Panamanian economy as a result of tourism. This accounted for 9.5% of the gross domestic product of the country, surpassing other productive sectors. Panama enacted Law Number 80 in 2012 to promote foreign investment and tourism. Law 80 replaced the older Law 8 in 1994. In Law 80 provides 100% exemption from income tax and real estate taxes for 15 years, duty-free imports for construction materials and equipment for 5 years, and a capital gains tax exemption for 5 years. My godfather, of course you want to go in there. Panama currency. The Panamanian currency is officially the bulba, fixed rate of 1-to-1 with the United States dollar since Panamanian independence in 1903. In practice, the Panama is dollarized. US dollars are legal tender used as paper currency. While Panama has its own coinage, US coins are widely used. Because it's tied to the US dollars, Panama has traditionally had low inflation. According to the Economic Commission of Latin America, Caribbean, Panama inflation in 2006 was 2%, as measured by the Weighted Consumer Price Index. So, Wow, that's just, that's insane. The bolivar replaced the Colombian peso in 1904. After the Panamanians' independence, the bolivar's banknotes were printed in 1941 by President Alfaz. They were recalled several days later, giving them the name seven-day dollars. The notes were burned by the new government, but occasionally the bolivars can be found in collections. These are the only banknotes ever issued by the Panaman and U.S. notes have ever circulated ever since. My godfather. Well, that's a thing. International trade. Just insane. The high levels of Panaman trade are a large part from the Colon free trade zone, the largest free trade zone in the Western Hemisphere. Last of year, the zone accounted for 92% of the Panaman exports and 64% of its imports. According to the analysis of the figures, the Colon Zone Management estimates of the Panama's trade, the United Nations Economic Commission, Platinum Measure, and the Caribbean. Panama's economy is also very much supported by trade and export of coffee and agricultural supports. The bilateral investment treatment, it's the Darien project, the Scottish Darien project to Caribbean, which led to the separation of Scotland. It hurts my head to understand it. Bilateral investment treaty between the governments of the United States and Panama was signed in October 1982. The treaty protects U.S. investments and assists Panama in its efforts to develop its economy by creating conditions more favorable to U.S. private investment and thereby strengthening the development of the private sector. The bid was the first treaty signed by the U.S. in the Western Hemisphere. The Panama-United States Promotion Agreement was signed in 2007 and provided Panama by Panama in July 2007, by President Obama in October 2011. The agreement entered in force in 2012, whatever that means. Oh my godfather, look at this. Oh, there's no old people in Panama. Panama is estimated population of around 4 million people. The portion of the population aged less than 15 in Panama was 29%. 65% of the population is between 15 and 65. 60% of the population, 6.6% of the population, 65 years and older. I've just never seen a curve like they're COVID free. Don't worry about them. Just involve it. Ethnic groups, so it's just really young population. In 2010, the population was 65% Mestizo, mixed white and Native Americans. 12.3% Native Americans, 9.6% Black or African descent, 6.8% Mulatto, and 6.7% White, whatever that means. Ethnic groups in Panama include Mestizo people who have a mixed European and Native ancestry. Black Afro-Panamanians account for 15-20% of the population. Most Afro-Panamanians live on the Panama colonial metropolitan area. In the Darien province, La Palma, Bocas del Toro, neighborhoods in Panama City have large populations, include large black populations, include Clu, El Toro, Rio, San, well, I can't pronounce all these places. Black Panamanians are descendants of African slaves brought to the Americas by the Atlantic slave trade. The second wave of black people brought to Panama came from the Caribbean during the construction of the Panama Canal. Panama also has a considerable Chinese and Indian population brought to work the canal during the construction. Most Chinese Panamanians reside in the province of Chuquí. Europeans and white Panamanians are a minority in Panama. Panama is also the home of a small Arab community that have mosques and practice Islam, as well as a Jewish community with many synagogues. Only 4 million people, and this number of people, I just can't, it's destroying my mind. The American population includes 7 ethnic groups. My godfather language. Spanish is the official dominant language. Spanish is spoken in Panama. It's known as Panamanian Spanish. About 93% of the population speaks Spanish as their first language. Many citizens who hold jobs at international levels or at business also speak English and Spanish. About 14% of Panamanians speak English. While the number is expected to rise because Panama now requires English classes in public schools. Native languages such as what NGADIRSBERE are spoken throughout the country, mostly in their native territories. Over 400,000 Padneans keep their native languages and customs. About 4% speak French, and 1% speak Arabic. My godfather. Large cities. There are the 10 largest Panamanian cities and towns. Oh, these are the thing. Most Panamanian large cities are part of the Panamanian city metropolitan area. So that's page 8. I don't know what they mean by there are. That's 8 onto 9. That was just absence. Religion. Christianity is the main religion of Panama. No surprise there. An official survey carried out by the government estimates that 63% of the population, or 2.5 million people, identifies themselves as Roman Catholic. 25% as Protestants. What? Jehovah's were the third largest congregation, comprising of 1.4%, followed by Adventists, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter Day Saints. I thought they were Buddhists, or they're Mormons. There's a very large Buddhist people of 18,000. Baha'i faith community in Panama is estimated as 2% of the national population. Baha'i. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter Day Saints claims more than 40,000 members. Okay. Indigenous religions. And there's a small number of Rastafarians. Well, there you go. Education. During the 16th century, education in Panama was provided by the Jesuits. Public education began in national and non-governmental institutions in 1903. The principle underlying the early education system was that children should receive different types of education in accordance with their social class and therefore position they were occupied in society. That's great. Public education began in Panama soon after it seceded from Colombia in 1903. The first efforts were guided by an extremely paternalistic view of the goals of education, as evidenced by comments made in the 1913 meeting of the first Panamanian Educational Assembly. The cultural heritage given by a child should be determined the social position he should occupy. For this reason, education should be different in accordance to the social class the student should be related. The ethicist folks challenged the elitist folks challenged rapidly after US influence. In 2010, it was estimated that 94.1% of the population were literate. Slightly more males than females. Education in Panama is compulsory for all children between ages 5, 6 and 15. In recent decades, school enrollments, but especially in upper school levels, have increased significantly. Panama participates in PISA exams, but due to the debts and unsatisfactory exam results, it's postponed its participation till 2018. Culture. The culture of Panama derives from the European music art traditions brought by the Spanish to Panama. Hegemonic forces have created hybrid forms of blending African and Native American culture and European culture. For example, tamborito, a Spanish dance with African rhythms and themes and dance moves. The dance is typical of diverse cultures of Panama. Handicraft. Outside Panama, original festivals take place throughout the year, featuring local musicians and dancers. Panama's blended culture is reflected in traditional products such as wood carving, ceremonial masks, potteries, as well as Panama's architectures and cuisines festivals. In earlier times, baskets were woven for utilitarian uses, but now many villages rely almost exclusively on income from the baskets they produced for tourists. An example of an undisturbed unique culture in Panama is that of the Guan, who are known for the molars. Mola is a Guan word for blouse, but the term mola has become to mean elaborate embroidered panels made by Guan women to make in front of the black of Guan women's blouse. They make layers of cloth, variant colours, that loosely stitch together and made using reverse applique process. Well, that is a big browse, would you? Holidays and festivities. The Christmas parade, known as El Día Fiesta Navidad is celebrated in the capital of Panama City. This holiday is celebrated on the 25th of December. The floats in the parade are decorated with Panamanian colors. The women wear dresses called polera, and the men dress in traditional montuno. In addition, the marching band and the parade consists of drummers keeps crowds entertained. In the city, a big Christmas tree is lit with Christmas lights, and everybody surrounds the tree and sings Christmas carols. Traditional cuisine. Since Panama's cultural heritage is influenced by many ethnicities, the traditional cuisine of the country includes ingredients from many cultures from all over the world. A mix of African, Spanish, Native American techniques, dishes, ingredients reflecting a diverse population. Since Panama is a land bridge between two continents, the large varieties of tropical fruit vegetables herbs are used in cooking. The famous fish market known as Mercado de Marcos offers fresh seafood and clevish, a seafood dish. A small shops along the street, which are called Costco Impala, which is a typical Latin American pastry, including a variety of different ingredients, either with meat or vegetarian, mostly fried. Another kind of pastry is a pastelo, pastelito, with the only difference in the comparison of the empanadas is that they are bigger. A typical Panamanian food are mild flavored without pungencies of some of Panama's Latin American Caribbean neighbors. Common ingredients are maize, rice. It's like Aussie food. It doesn't taste like anything. Traditional clothing. Panamanian men's traditional clothing called montura consists of a white cotton short trousers and woven hats. A Panama hat, I suppose, would be called. That's a 10. Oh my god, fuck. It keeps on going. Oh no, I think we're coming to the end here. Panama, well, if there were Latin American and American influence and American dollars, that have to have American baseball. But using the American dollar, I can't get my head around that one. Traditional women's clothing are the polera. Originated in Spain in the 16th century, in the early 1800s, it was typical in Panama, worn by female servants, especially wet nurses. Later, it was adopted by upper-class women. You can imagine that pretty blousy, blue, booby. Polera is made of cambric, or fine linen. It is white and usually around, 13 yards of material? Originally, polera consists of ruffled blouse worn off the shoulder and a skirt with gold buttons. The skirt is also ruffled so that when it's lifted up, it looks like a peacock's tail or a mantilla's fan. The design of the skirt and blouse are usually flowers and birds. Two large maxing pom-poms, motta, on the front and backs, and four ribbons hanging in the front and the back of the waist. Five gold chains hanging from the neck to the waist, and the gold and a gold cross medallion in the back ribbon is worn as a choker. A silk purse is worn at the waistband. Earrings are usually gold coral. Slippers are usually matched the colour of the polera. Hair is usually worn in a bun, held in three large gold combs and pearls, worn like a crown. Quality polera can cost up to $10,000 and make a cake a year to complete, my godfather. It would have to be. It wouldn't be simple, would it? It'd take all this material to get across. Today, the different types of polera consist of short sleeve, ruffle skirt, blouse, two full length shirts, petticoat. Girl wears whatever it is in their hair. Gold coins and jewellery are added to the outfit. The polera matura is a daily dress with a blouse, skirt, silver colour, single gold chain, pendant, earrings, natural flowers in the hair. Instead of the off the shoulder blouse, it is worn a fitted white jacket and shoulder pleats and flared linen hem. It's just like most things. Literature. The first literature relating to Panama can be dated to 1535. Bottle literary movement is appearing in the mid-19th century onwards. That's, it only gets one line in Wikipedia. Sports. The U.S. influence in Panama can be seen in the country's sports. Baseball is Panama's national sport, and the country has regional teams, and a national team represents the national events. At least 140 Panaman players have played professional baseball in the United States, more than any other Central American country. In boxing, Panamanians are the International Boxing Hall of Fame. Since the end of the 20th century, the Association of Football has become more popular in Panama. Top-tier domestic Panamanian football, Liga Panamania del Futbol, was founded in 1988. The national team appeared in FIFA World Cup for the first time in 2018, appearing in Group G facing Belgium, England, and Tunisia. However, the team lost all three games, failing to advance past the group stage. Notable players for the nation's team include a whole heap of other players you can't pronounce. Basketball is also popular in Panama. There are regional teams as well as a squad that competes internationally. Two Panamanese prominent players are Ronaldo Blackman and four-time NBA All-Star Kevin Daly, a 10-year captain, a showman for the Harlem Globetrotters. Other remarkable players are the Panamanian international Mario Butler and Ronaldo Fraser. Other non-traditional sports in the country have great importance, such as triathlon, which has captured the attention of many athletes nationwide. Flag football has also grown popularity in both men and women with the international participation in the world discipline. What is flag football? Retires who even with the festival called Turkey Ball. Other sports are American football, rugby, hockey, softball, amateur sports, skateboarding, BMX, surfing, blah, blah, blah. Long jumper jumped a long way and swimming, they had someone swim. She made first representative to compete in taekwondo. There you go. That's Panama for you. Interesting place. And it's leading me on to investigate the Darien Project. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.